Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're back again with another Money, Riches, and Wealth show. And co-host tonight is the one and only Michael P. McCarthy.
As happy as ever to join you.
And how are you today?
I'm doing very good.
Well, you ought to be. You've been on vacation for like you're
I
European
took Friday
or something.
Off.
Yeah, what do you mean? You were in Colorado. You were wherever else you were.
We tend to take all of our vacations when things are the slowest. So
there
Colorado,
you go.
One day at Hershey Park, and next week. I
thought
can't
you
wait.
Became a voluntary European.
Yeah.
You know? Take off the whole month of August.
Next week we'll be down, and I think our radio show might even go down that far to Chincoteague, Virginia.
Virginia, there you go. All right, sounds like a good time. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, Mikey. Our phone number, if you want to call in and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and direct the conversation and say this here is a topic that I'm specifically concerned about. And if you want to ask that question, now's the time to call in. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in. 410-922-6680. All lines are open, so feel free to call in and ask your question and direct the conversation.
So, Drew, I have a question for you while we're waiting for the first caller on Totally Open Lines to get their question answered. My question to you is, I have seen just an enormous uptick, and I also think it's a little politically motivated, but there's an enormous uptick in the number of articles that are referencing that they're coming for your Social Security. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you anybody who believes that there's going to be any cuts in Social Security anytime soon, you know, or even in the future when they predict all this downturn in Social Security and you're only going to get 70%. I mean, you know, the politicians know one thing, and that is votes count. And the biggest voting constituency of the United States of America and any country in the world is people over the age of 65. It's always been, always will be. And you're not going to irritate those people. And also, Social Security Administration is built by the people who print the money. So it's highly unlikely that they're going to stop printing the money so that you can get it. Argentina and Russia. Russia's in a serious economic crisis right now, and yet they still pay out all their old age pensions to all the people in the country, and they always will, because they understand that you don't irritate the gray panthers.
Yeah,
well, I'm one of them.
you don't have enough hair to be gray.
But whatever I do have, you can see it is gray there,
yep,
Mikey.
Yeah. Now, but I will say this, as far as, you know, somebody saying, well, no, it's possible. The most likely, if they were going to cut back Social Security benefits, you know, if, you know, you were making $65,000 a year, $70,000 a year, $80,000 a year, they're probably not going to cut back on your benefits. If they
yeah, but
do,
the way they're going to do that, Mike, yeah, is they're not going to say, hey, we're going to cut back on your Social Security because you make $80,000. What they're going to do is they're going to say, we're going to tax you more because you make $80,000. And so they'll just raise taxes on people who make certain amounts of money, and that's how they'll compensate. You know, they don't means test Social Security. They means test it through the tax system. They've been doing that since 1982. They means test Social Security through the tax system, and that's what they're going to do. You know, also, Mike, I've been in this business for 44 years now, right? 44 years. And in 44 years, for the last 20, they have told me that Medicare is going bankrupt and they're not going to make payments Every 5 years, Medicare is going bankrupt. They're not going to make payments. Medicare is going bankrupt. They're not going to make payments. And here we are in 2023, and they're still telling me Medicare is going bankrupt. We're not going to make payments. And that will never happen either. So don't count on it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Anyway, we're on an open show, right?
Open show. All lines open. We're waiting on your call.
We're waiting on your call. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in. Ask your question. And, you know, Mike, we just had a client pass away this week, and or last week was, right?
Last week,
and,
yep.
And it's a bit of a mess because the client wasn't necessarily communicating everything. He he started to live with somebody that he wasn't married to, you know, and all kinds of issues have come out of that. You know, the key is that if you, whatever estate planning you're doing, make sure that you're no matter what you want to do, you do what you want to do, but make sure you're keeping your estate planning in line, because it really can cause all kinds of mess.
And it's never good to surprise people after you die.
Yeah, never. That doesn't help anyone. So anyway, we're on an open show. We're out of time for this first quarter of the show. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in while we're on this break, all lines are open. 410-922-6680. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, and I have a question for you. Is your financial advisor a doctor of personal financial advice? Do you get strategies to reduce taxation, Social Security, Medicare advice, sophisticated retirement planning, investment allocation strategies, estate planning, or help with any issue of money? It is time you do a financial physical with me and my team at the consulate and experience the difference. You hear the depth of knowledge we have about personal finance, so do a financial physical and you'll experience what we believe an advisor should do for you. They should be independent, experienced, credentialed, fee-only, comprehensive fiduciaries. They should be a doctor of personal finance and not salespeople selling you products. Set up an introductory meeting by calling 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or go online, financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com. It's time you experience the difference.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. Only Marie called in during the break, so we're going to go to her in a second, but plenty of lines open if you want to call in. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question and direct the conversation, because that's what this show's all about, is helping you with the things that are you're most concerned with, not us making up things and hoping that you're concerned with them. But anyway, let's go to Marie and see what her question is, Mike.
All right, Marie, how can we help?
Okay. This week, I received a notice in a letter form that said it was a form 5498.
Right.
Then it said IRA and listed a number of an IRA. And then it had fair market value of account, $1,765.
Right.
And it looks like this is from a previous employer that I had. And I'm just wondering, this is for the year 2022.
Right. So, okay, let me explain. So what I'm going to guess is that you had an old 401k plan with an employer that had less than $5,000 in it. And the employer, when they couldn't get in touch with you, they converted it to an IRA. Okay. When they converted it to the IRA, the company who the IRA is with, what company is it with?
It's with Orrstown Bank.
Orrstown Bank then had the obligation through the IRS that they have to send the IRS information about any IRA that any taxpayer has in their bank. So they send the IRS a form 5498. And because they send it to the IRS, the Freedom of Information Act requires that the bank also send a duplicate copy of that document to you. And so that's what you're getting. So the point is that that money is yours. That money is in an IRA. You can do anything with it anytime you want. And the way it got there is because you had an employer plan that you never responded to or whatever, and they converted it to an IRA.
So what do I do with this? Do I send this?
No, you don't have to send that form anywhere. That form is just information only. So you can shred that form anytime you want, okay? But you can go to Orrstown Bank and say, hey, I've got $1,700 here. You can take it out and pay taxes on it, or you can transfer it to another IRA you might have. So those are some of your options.
How old are you?
Okay. 82.
Oh, yep. You don't have any penalties. You're good to go.
Yeah, but she also has required minimum distributions that she probably hasn't been taking on that money. So anyway, I would just definitely make sure that you start attending to that account as soon as possible and figure out what to do. If you're not in a high tax bracket, you might as well just cash it in. And here's another thing. If you give money to charity, you can give any portion of that $1,700 to charity tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
You give money to charity?
Yes, I do.
How much do you give a year?
10%.
Of $500,000, $5,000?
No.
So it's a couple thousand a year?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So why don't you, next year, 2024, go to Orrstown Bank and say, liquidate this whole account, give it to my church of choice, and boom, the end of the account.
Okay.
All right?
All right. I appreciate it very much, Drew.
All right, you take care. Oh, and also keep in mind, if you do that, make sure you tell your tax accountant when you do your taxes that year that you did that, because nothing will tell the accountant. The accountant will only think you took $1,700 out of that account, but nothing will say you gave it to charity unless you tell the accountant, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very important. All right, great call.
You did a QCD.
Thank you very much.
All right. Where are we going there, Mikey?
The button's not working.
The needle will take care of that.
All right. So we've got an open show, plenty of time left in the show, but let's go right to Kathy in Linthicum. Kathy, how can we help?
Hi. Hi, Drew. Hey. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Kathy.
Kathy. And I had a quick question for you. I used to work for Coca-Cola Enterprises. I haven't started taking my pension yet. However, I did just receive information in the mail that pension plan is now offering a lump sum.
Right.
So my question is it better to sign up for the monthly annuity, or is it better to take the lump sum cash and invest it?
Okay. First question is, what's your favorite Coca-Cola product?
That would be the classic Coca-Cola.
All right. Yeah, I agree.
Or the new Coke.
I like the Zero Coke, too. You know, there's something about that I like. Anyway, so here's the answer to your question. There is no simple answer. If you go to a financial advisor, they're going to tell you take a lump sum because they have an economic bias for you to take a lump sum. But really, you need to go through an exercise to figure out whether to take a lump sum or annuity. First thing you do is you have to do the present value calculation. You have to say, is the annuity they offering me really worth the lump sum? In other words, I've done the calculation where the monthly annuity is far more valuable than the lump sum they're offering. And now you expect them to be relatively equivalent from a present value point of view. In other words, if they're offering you $300,000, it should be somewhat equivalent to $2,000 a month or whatever the case may be, from a present value calculation. Now that gets a little complicated, but it's not too complicated. As to what's a present value calculation. Second thing you do after you say, okay, the two are relatively equal, okay? So now it comes down to a bunch of subjective things. The subjective things are, do you really want to manage the money? Are you going to be prudent with the money? Are you going to make sure that you have all your insurance protections, that if anybody ever sues you, that you're not going to lose the money and so forth? These are some of the questions you're going to ask subjectively to make sure that if you take the lump sum, you do it prudently? Are you concerned about heirs in the future, et cetera, et cetera? The annuity, on the other hand, is going to be simple. You're just going to get monthly money. It's guaranteed by not only Coca-Cola, but the PBGC. It's going to be paid for your entire lifetime, regardless if you live to be 100 years old or 85 years old. Doesn't matter. It's just going to keep pumping out. Now, the negative to the annuity is that it's going to get eroded by inflation. I like to talk about my father-in-law, who in 1974 retired from GM, got a pension more than what he was making while working. And between Social Security and his pension, he was really making a lot more than when he was working. By 1994, when he died, he was literally living just slightly above the poverty line because that GM pension was fixed and inflation had eroded the value of that that pension. So these are some of the questions that you have to think about and ponder when you make a decision, lump sum versus annuity. What's most important to you? And, you know.
And were you doing that calculation based on the first calculation, based on how long you expected to live? Support?
Yeah, you're going to normally project that you're going to live to be 92 or something of that years of age. And you're going to use an interest rate of something between 4% and 5%. That would be the interest rate you would use.
One other thing, and Drew, I don't remember hearing you say it, maybe you did, is if you take the lump sum and all of a sudden you have a need that is in excess of what that lump sum can provide, if you don't have other liquid assets to pull from, that can be a problem as well. You know, the air conditioner, the heat goes up. Well, you're going to have to take a loan to buy it and pay it back with the lump sum versus having the flexibility.
There's all kinds of subjective things you have to think about. What kinds of things you have? Do you have other pensions? You know, that's another good thing. How big is your Social Security check? You know, these are all the things. But beware of financial advisors. We are financial advisors. Beware of financial advisors because they tend to have the economic bias of just saying, take the lump sum. But when you're a fiduciary financial advisor like Mike and I are, we cannot just say, take a lump sum. We must prove to the client which is the best option based on all these different subjective and objective calculations.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the second part of that question then is, my sister happens to be a lender for the marine industry, and she's often said that unless you have, you know, like W-2 income, let's just say, you can't get a loan. Now, I'm not talking about a boat. I don't want to buy a boat. But if eventually, down the road in retirement, we want to buy a house, do the pensions, the individual?
Let me answer that when I come back. You hang up, and when I come back, I will answer that question. It's a great question, and I'll answer that for you.
All right.
You, okay?
Thanks, Kathy.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. It's Drew Tignanelli here with Michael P. McCarthy. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Carol Peter, I hope you'll hold on for just a little longer because I want to answer this question that Kathy asked just before we had to take the break. And she was basically bringing up that her sister, who's a mortgage lender, said to her that mortgages are always based on income. And if you don't have income, they're not going to lend you money. And Kathy was concerned that if she doesn't take the annuity, possibly she's not going to have income to be able to get a mortgage in the future if they want to buy a second house or something of that sort. Fascinating. The mortgage people are probably the most fascinating, illogical group of people you'll ever meet in your entire life. So I've had this question many times with clients, and you know what we do? And the mortgage people are, you know, actually, they encourage it, you know, but we take an IRA. Let's say you take a lump sum, you got $300,000 in an IRA, and you go to a mortgage company and you say, I want to take out a $400,000 mortgage. And they say to you, well, wait a minute, you don't have income enough to satisfy this $400,000. You're shy about $2,000 a month. Okay, what do you want me to do? Well, I'll tell you what, if you take out $2,000 a month from your IRA until we get this mortgage application through and you show us that you're taking it out, then we'll increase your income by $2,000 a month, and we'll get the loan approved. Really? Yeah, really. Okay. So the client takes out $2,000 in April, $2,000 in May, $2,000 in June. They settled the mortgage, and then we take one of those $2,000, put it back in the IRA as a 60-day rollover, because you can only do one of those. It's very important. And voila, you got your mortgage and you improved your income. Fascinating concept, mortgage people. But anyway, let's move on to Carol in Towson.
Hey, Carol, how can we help?
Yes, hi. I'm 75, and I have four small IRA accounts.
Okay.
And I've been taking minimum distributions from two of them to satisfy the entire required minimum distribution amount.
Okay.
So now, this is getting a little complicated. I want to, because I'm so old, I want to roll these over into one. So,
okay.
And I want to do a direct rollover, so I never get a check or anything. And I was concerned about whether you can do that or not.
You could do it. It's not called a direct rollover when you do an IRA. It's called a trustee-to-trustee transfer. But it's the same concept. Are you holding the money with banks, or are you holding the money with brokerage firms?
Both.
Both. So what you do is you go to the brokerage firm. Don't deal with banks. They're a bunch of ripoff artists, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Mikey's shuddering at my thoughts of saying that.
Not as much
on
that
the air.
One.
Anyway, go to one of the brokerage firms that you want to work with as the total, and tell them, here's a statement from this bank. Here's a statement from this bank. Here's a statement from this other broker. Give me transfer forms to sign, boom, boom, boom. You sign them, you give them statements that are current, and boom, they'll transfer them all in as trustee-to-trustee transfers, and you won't even get a notice that you have to even report it in any way, shape, or form on your tax return. It's called a trustee-to-trustee transfer.
Okay, so I guess before I do that, I should take the required minimum distributions from all of them.
Yeah, you should. And remember, if you give to charity, always make sure you take it from your IRA, right?
Right. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good job.
Thanks, Carol.
All right, Carol.
Time. All right, so we're open show. We still got plenty of time left. 410-922-6680. I don't like the way it's written on this little card over here, because the radio...
You're supposed to memorize it. 410-922-6680. I don't even have a card
here,
Mikey.
Listen, Peter's been waiting long enough. Peter, how can we help?
Hello.
Hey, Peter.
Hey. a bit of explanation and terminology here. Between a...
you have your radio on, because that's what's confusing you.
Yeah,
we're
about a 10-second
delay.
No, okay. Power of attorney versus executor.
Power of attorney versus executor.
One's while you're living, the other's when you're not.
That's true. The attorney, in fact, is the person that can handle your finances while you're alive. The executor can only do things of your estate after you die. Is that what you're asking?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the two.
My sister has my power of attorney.
Okay.
Since I'm still talking to you, I'm still on the planet.
Okay.
So an executor is someone who's passed.
Correct. Yes, the executor only takes over the minute they say, "Yep, Peter's no longer with us." The attorney, in fact, can do anything until they say, oops, Peter's no longer here. And if that attorney, in fact, 10 minutes later tries to do something, it's actually considered potentially fraudulent.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So,
now, do I need to, in the event of my demise, do I need to go through some type of paperwork to be able to continue my situation with my sister? In other words, can she be able to dispose of my property or...
Yeah, she can do anything.
As long as you name
with,
her as your executor in your will.
You named her as your executor in your will, then she gets to do anything she wants once you're gone.
Okay, okay.
All right?
Gotcha, gotcha.
All right, buddy, good question.
Thank you so much.
We're on an open show tonight, Mikey, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question.
Well,
do
we
have anybody
call,
online?
We have one caller on the line. We'll go right to Dave in Parkville.
Oh,
Dave, how can we help?
Parkville.
Hi, guys. Calling about capital gains exclusion or our primary residence.
Sure.
That we're getting ready to sell, or I'm getting ready to sell. My wife passed in April. And I'm understanding that there's a $250,000 exclusion for each of us.
Yep, that's true. But it's a little more involved than that. You also get a 50% step up in the basis for the fair market value of the house when she passed away.
Okay.
So what's the value of the house right now? About 500, 600, a million?
$400,000 to $450,000.
$400,000 to $450,000, okay? So you paid what, $100,000, $200,000?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah, let's say you paid $100,000, okay? So what happens is her half of the house gets stepped up to the $450,000 basis, or fair market value. So that, well, let's call that $225,000. So put that 50% on the side, $225,000. Your basis is the original $100,000 you paid for it plus improvements. Let's say that was $150,000. So that's $75,000. So add that to the $225,000. Your new basis is now $300,000, and you get a $250,000 tax-free capital gain exclusion in addition for a total tax-free transaction. No matter how you slice it and dice it, my friend, when you sell that house, it will be 100% tax-free.
Well, you're pretty close on those numbers. You must have been looking in my files.
Well, now, and that's also as long as you continue living there and you sell it before it has been too late to have lived there in two of the last 5 years.
Right. So you'd have to, you know, move out of it and be gone for like 3 years and then sell it, and you won't get those $250,000 gain exclusion. But it sounds like you're ready to sell now.
It is.
And you don't own another place anywhere else yet?
No.
No. Where are you going to go?
Senior living.
Oh, cool. Right. Which one?
Oakcrest.
Ah, got lots of clients over at Oakcrest, so they
Mike
all
Rowe.
Love it.
And yep. You got Mike Rowe's parents over there.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you'll sell that. You're absolutely going to be tax-free. I wouldn't worry about it or even think about it, okay?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Take care. All right. Well, we've got to go. Take a break, and we'll be back. 410-922-6680. Lines
open
are open. Yep. Take it away. This is Drew Tignanelli, and I have a question for you. Is your financial advisor a doctor of personal financial advice? Do you get strategies to reduce taxation, Social Security, Medicare advice, sophisticated retirement planning, investment allocation strategies, estate planning, or help with any issue of money? It is time you do a financial physical with me and my team at the consulate and experience the difference. You hear the depth of knowledge we have about personal finance, so do a financial physical and you'll experience what we believe an advisor should do for you. They should be independent, experienced, credentialed, fee-only, comprehensive fiduciaries. They should be a doctor of personal finance and not salespeople selling you products. Set up an introductory meeting by calling 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or go online, financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com. It's time you experience the difference.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show with Michael P. McCarthy tonight, and you got the A-team here, and we've got a quarter hour left. Anybody on the line, Mikey?
No, we are waiting for that listener who's been thinking about whether or not if they should call or not. The answer is yes, you should.
Yes, you should. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in. 410-922-6680. You know, and Peter's question was very good, and a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, your power of attorney for healthcare and finances are what we call living documents. If you're alive, they're active, and they can be used, and you can do what you need to do. But the minute they say you're no longer with us, boom, those documents immediately discontinue, and an attorney in fact, that's the title, even though it says attorney, don't think about it as attorney, it's just a title for the person that's designated as the agent to do something, immediately ceases to have power. So that attorney in fact should never do anything with those documents after the person has been declared deceased. The executor takes over, or there's a couple other things that could take over, but the executor takes over the minute the person dies. Now, they don't actually take over the minute the person dies because they still have to get a death certificate. They still have to take it to the court. They have to take the will to the court, and they have to say to the court, hey, this is the will says I'm the executor, I'm taking over, and I'm in charge. I'm large and in charge. So that's how that works. We've got Mark on the line, right?
Yep. Mark, how can we help you?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
We're doing great.
Good, good. Hey, so quick question, probably sort of somewhat of a dumb question, but I recently, during COVID, I got caught in a 1031 exchanged, and of course ended up paying taxes on my entire sale of my one home, which I had was a rental property. And so, anyway, so long story short, if right now I own one home, it's paid for, et cetera, but within the next couple of years, I will probably move on and buy another house. My question is if, say, I buy a house in the next 6 months, get another house established, and then still living in this home, that would be like a secondary, if you will, and then sell the current home, the capital gains, and as you discussed with the other gentleman, all that still applies, even though you have another house you've already bought?
Yep, yeah, as long as you do it within 3 years of the date you moved.
Yep.
Okay, so three years from the date you... Say it one more time.
So
3 years
another...
from the date you move,
right?
From the original house that you're selling to the new
house. But that's if he changed it to his primary residence, right, Mike? So
that's if he kept it as his primary residence.
If he left it
and moved to Pennsylvania and bought a home in PA, but I still stayed here, say, for another 5-6 years and lived in this home as my primary. And
if you keep that home as your primary. In other words, you file your taxes there, you're keeping your driver's license there,
correct,
you're continuing to vote in Maryland, then that home is still your primary home, and until you no longer make it your primary home, you get a $500,000 capital gain exclusion if you're married. And like Mike says, if you switch your primary residence to Pennsylvania now, you have 3 years to get rid of Maryland.
Right, because you have to live in it three of the last 5 years, I guess, as a whole kind of thing.
Two of the last five.
Right. Now, here's a key thing to keep in mind, and this is one that really infuriates me in Maryland. So Maryland's got this silly tax that says if you're moving to Pennsylvania and you change your residency up to Pennsylvania and then you sell your Maryland home and you're saying that you're a Pennsylvania resident, Maryland wants a 7% withholding tax to force you to file a Maryland income tax return. Very easily, you can file a 506 AE with the state of Maryland prior to settlement and say, hey, that Maryland home was my primary home for two of the last 5 years. Therefore, I'm going to get the Section 121 $500,000 capital gain exclusion. Therefore, that house sale is not going to be taxable. Don't withhold the money at settlement, and voila, you will not have a nickel withheld at settlement. But don't count on the settlement company or the real estate agent to tell you that or to help you with that. You got to know it yourself.
And I get that because my wife, she's a real estate agent. She takes the classes and all, and it's interesting the things you learn in classes depending, you know, who teaches the class. But that's the one off the quizzer on because that's the first time I've actually heard that. And I used to do taxes for people here in Maryland for 20-some years as a volunteer, about a volunteer. And that's the first I've heard that. So thank you for that info. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, well, the real estate agents don't seem to learn that one. So, you know, that's
well, you know something.
But there's going to be one now.
Well, and there's going to be one.
There's probably no vested interest. As far as they're concerned, you're leaving the state, not my problem. They'll probably never see you again. So they don't seem to have probably maybe a vested interest in telling you because it's nothing to gain for them. The only difference is you'd be really helping your client out, though, by telling them that.
Yep. All right, Mark.
Hey,
good
guys,
call.
Thank you so
good
much.
Question.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
All right. Without a lot of time left, we're going to go right to Dave in Baltimore. Dave, how can we help?
Yeah, I've been paying, you know, require minimum distributions for an IRA. You know, let me ask you, in order to avoid taxes, I would have to make a qualified charitable donation, right?
For no well, it depends on your income situation. But if you do a QCD, you'll pay no tax on that money coming out.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, but if
that's the only way you can do it.
A charitable donation, right?
Right. It's the only way you can get money out of an IRA without being taxable.
And remember that only makes sense if you would have given the money anyway.
That's correct.
You're net better off if you keep the money if you wouldn't have given it taxes. That is correct. You know, depending on how low, you know, if you have a very low income, you may not pay tax either.
Yeah.
Right.
And you might have a lot of itemized deductions and you may not pay taxes.
Now, mine is $63,000 a year, individual.
Okay.
So that's not law.
Yep. Nope.
But, you know, somebody like yourself should be thinking about Roth conversion every year, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 a year, and just chip away at it and just keep going.
Have a big medical year.
Yeah.
Well, if you do it Roth, you have to pay taxes, right?
You have to report it as taxable, yeah. But if you can keep that money in the 12% tax bracket or 22%, whatever the case may be, it may prove to be cheaper than holding it and deferring it into higher tax brackets possibly in the future.
So you know what? You mean do it Roth? I have a choice to do it Roth.
Get money out.
To bless you.
I see. Okay.
Anyway, right, there you go, on. Dave.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
No
good question. Is that it, Mikey?
That's it.
Well, let me. I had something else I was going to be talking about with the concept of the executor and so forth. And here's a very important thing to, and we talk about this with all of our clients because most people don't realize it. And that is, you know, you go to a lawyer and you get this fancy will, Mike, and it's 20 pages long, and you signed it in this very formal setting, and you had notaries there, and you had witnesses there, and the lawyers there, and you're doing all this, and you got all this fancy paper, and you got the original, and he makes copies, and he sends it this way and that way, and everybody, oh, wow, I just did my estate plan. But here's the point. The point is that usually the will, for a lot of people, doesn't really direct a lot of assets, does it? You know, because titling, in other words, if I put somebody's joint name on something, that asset is not going to be impacted by the will because titling trumps everything. So if I put my home is in my name and my wife's name, and if I go to my lawyer and I say to him, hey, write in there 5 pages why I don't want to give my half the house to my wife, and I really detail it out why, it has absolutely no impact if the house is owned jointly with my wife, period. End of the story. You could write, 50 pages, and it has nothing to do with it. Titling trumps everything. And then the beneficiary. So let's say my wife is the beneficiary of my IRA, and I say I don't want her to be the beneficiary in my will, and I write 5 pages why my children should get it 50-50 and not her, but she's the beneficiary. Guess what? I could make a great case in my will that she should not get the IRA, and it should go 50-50 to my children, and no impact whatsoever because beneficiaries trump the will also. That's why the will is an important document everybody should have. But if you don't coordinate it with what's happening with your titling and your beneficiaries, that will may not accomplish what you thought you were trying to accomplish.
Yep.
Anyway, we see that too often too, don't we?
Yep, we see that too often. The other thing that we see too often is the direction of personal property. Grandpa said in my whole life that whenever he died, I got his
yeah, right.
I got his Rolex or I got his whatever.
Yeah, and if he didn't have it laid out like that, you're not going to get it, you know? Anyway, Mikey, we're out of time again.
Yep.
Things fly
wonderful
fast.
Evening.
Anyway, we're finished tonight, and this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna be